Welcome to this latest edition of Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Real Deal Quinn. Season 17 premiere of the Real Deal Podcast. It was on this day, October 8th, 2008, in which the Real Deal Podcast premiered, then called a Saturday morning wake-up call. We went through many names before settling in on the Real Deal Podcast about, five or six years ago. I lost time, lost track. I've actually lost track of when we started calling it the Real Deal Podcast. And I would say about 6 years ago. So we've been calling it the Real Deal Podcast for about roughly 6 years. This is season 17, 16 years in the books. And I'm excited to embark on another season with you. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of interviews. Been seeing a lot. You know, pandemic. We've done various series, The Wire, Snowfall. So, over 972 episodes. This is episode 973 of the Real Deal Podcast. So again, happy, excited to be with you for another season. And I appreciate all the support that's come with the podcast, and all the listens and downloads and views and what have you. We're going to get started with the, as always, with the game of the week in the NFL. Great weekend of football in general, both college and pro. We'll talk more about the college later on. But the game of the week, maybe the game of the year in terms of the NFL, had to be Baltimore and Cincinnati. This was a game that really, when you look back on the season, it'd be a game changer for the Cincinnati Bengals, because you think about it, they win this game, they're 2-3. Baltimore actually would have been 2-3 as well. Pittsburgh lost, so they would only been a game out of first place. So that's how big of a game this was. It was a home loss in a division in the conference. So this game, this was a game that Cincinnati seemingly was never somewhat, I wouldn't say they were in control, but seemingly I thought Cincinnati was in great shape during the course of this game. The way Joe Burrow was throwing the football, Burrow was, I know he had the one interception that was costly, but outside that, he couldn't do anything more. 30 of 39, 392, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. But McPherson misses a field goal. And on a bad hold, it wasn't his fault. The holder dropped the ball. It was a terrible hold. Normally, McPherson has been a money kicker over the course of his career, making big kicks not only in the regular season, but in the postseason, especially the year when Cincinnati went to the Super Bowl. So that wasn't his fault. And Justin Tucker, of course, you know, who had been struggling from deep, is not the lockdown automatic kicker that he has been throughout the course of his career. He makes a money 56-yard field goal to tie the game, sitting in overtime. And, of course, Cincinnati misses the field goal, and Baltimore gets the ball back, and they have a long run. And Derrick Henry, who had been under control for the most part, he has a long 51-yard run to set up Baltimore, and they take this 41-38. Lamar Jackson was absolutely sensational in this game. 348 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, no turnovers in general. 12 carries, a little high, but 55 yards. So, I mean, I don't like the 12 carries, but he made plays. You know, he makes one play, touchdown pass to Isaiah Likely, the tight end, who he drops the ball, seemingly almost loses his balance, is running. I believe to his right, throws the ball across his body, which is actually a no-no. Late in down the middle, that's a no-no. It has an interception waiting to happen normally for any mere mortal quarterback. But this is Lamar Jackson we're talking about, and throws a bullet to Isaiah Likely. Just one of the great plays that you'll ever see a quarterback make. Is one of the reasons why he's a 2-time MVP. This is a bad loss for Cincinnati, to say the least. Because again, this was a game in a division at home. This is a game, Cincinnati, you know, feeling good about themselves coming off of to get their first win last week. Had a chance to establish some, you know, build up and establish some momentum. You have Baltimore on the ropes. You're moving the ball. You're moving the ball up and down the field. That's the one thing that come out this, that came out this game that I would be concerned about if I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. That their defense, forget about where they were last year. Last year they were arguably the best defense in the league. I didn't expect them to be to that level because it was just they were just insanely just only giving them like 16 points a game and having number one stats across the board. I expect them to come down a tad to maybe being just a top five, a top 10 defense. Right now, you know, their defense has been awful for the most part. Outside the Buffalo Bills game, their defense, Dallas ran wild against them in that fourth quarter. Kansas City, of course, had their best offensive game against them in the opening, to open the season. The Raiders, you know, had a big fourth quarter. And they were able to make big plays on them late in that game a few weeks back. So the Baltimore defense has not been good at all. And Baltimore is fortunate, no, not for Lamar Jackson, fortunate to be 3-2, to be honest with you. But they are 3-2 and seemingly in control of that division. Because that division right now, with the quarterbacking, with Cincinnati being in the tank right now, and the rest of the quarterbacking with Deshaun Watson and having Justin Fields, and the division is Baltimore's to lose. Let's be honest. Even though they are tied with Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't think that like Pittsburgh. We'll talk about Pittsburgh more when we get into our Fade Four. But this is Baltimore's division to lose. And again, Baltimore wants to get to the Super Bowl. They have to kind of tighten up that defense somewhat. It doesn't have to get back to the same level that it was last year, but it has to be at least somewhere in the top 10. As far as Cincinnati goes, I don't think Cincinnati's done. Remember, they have a soft schedule to end the season. Their four losses, they are not a 1-4 team. This is not a 1-4 football team. There are teams that are 1-4 that are, you would say they're an awful football team. Cincinnati is not an awful. Cincinnati, they're playing bad right now, mostly, especially defensively. Defensively, they are one of the worst defenses in the league. But they're looking at four losses. Those four losses have come by a combined 15 points. So that's like a field goal and some change. So they've lost some close, heartbreaking games. I still believe in Cincinnati to make a playoff run. They have Joe Burrow's too good of a quarterback, and they are too well coached to me to just roll over and have a season, have one of these lost seasons. I don't see it happening. I would not kick dirt on Cincinnati as of yet, but as they say in baseball, it's getting late early. So they need to turn it around immediately. But again, the schedule is not like that. You look at their schedule. There's some winnable games remaining on their schedule, especially at the end of the season. The Fade Four, let's begin with the big news of the day. Minnesota Jets, of course, this prompted the news of the day with Robert Saleh being fired, relieved of his duties. The first time in 25 years that Woody Johnson has fired a coach in season since he took over for Leon Hess back in back in 1999. So the Jets lose 23-17. They were down at one point, 17-0, made a little late run. Minnesota goes to 5-0. Aaron Rodgers was awful in that game, 3 interceptions, including an interception when the Jets seemingly could have been driving for the game with a touchdown. So they lose on a day in London where, you know, Sam Darnold was mediocre. Like, Darnold in this game probably had his win of the season. Darnold in this game was 14-31 for 179, $179 in an interception, and they only ran the ball. Now, the carries are the key. They ran the ball 30 times to 82 yards, so, you know, only 3 yards to carry. So this came down to just the Jets and sloppiness and just They lost Sauce. They lose Sauce Gardner in the game, I believe, in the third quarter. Like I said, this was an ugly game, period. Neither team cracked 300 yards offense, 254 to 253. You had five turnovers in the game. So it was not pretty to watch. Minnesota wins a game, which, you know, they didn't even play that well. Which is what good teams do. So give them credit for being 5-0. Kevin O'Connell has to be considered coach of the year right now, if that vote were taken. But the big story, of course, is Robert Saleh being relieved of his duties. Saleh being relieved of his duties, 20-36 as the Jet coach. You want to say no playoff appearances. He, you know, was a one-dimensional coach. Great defense, horrible offense. And that's not going to get it done in 2024. Defensive coaches, you look at defensive coaches winning percentages coming into 2023 since this is going back since 2019. Defensive coordinators have a winning percentage of 41% versus offensive coordinators winning at 54%. So it's been a distinct difference between the success offensive coordinators have had versus defensive guys have had. Listen, I want to say, because I was not surprised by this at the least bit. Do I agree with it? I want to say yes and no. It is a bit of a panic move, but I understand if you lose the locker room, and once guys start whispering within the locker room, then it's probably time to pull the plug. If you don't, but here's what I'll say. Here's where the dysfunction comes in. Aaron Rodgers clearly didn't have a good relationship with Robert Saleh. It was well documented. Rodgers skips out on the mandatory mini camp. That really was the beginning of the end of not only Robert Saleh, but the Jets season. Like, and there's this thing about Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers is being treated like a diva. Okay, he's being treated like the diva that he is. And we understand in sports, there are guys who get to a certain level to where they behave like divas, and their play on the floor of the court warrants that treatment. I understand it. It is what it is. All players are not treated alike, treated the same. That's just not professional sports. It's not college sports, for that matter. But Aaron Rodgers is 41 years old. He is clearly in decline. He's been bad this year. He was awful in that game. I don't know what version of Aaron Rodgers they thought they were going to get. But they get a guy who looks shot. He looks done. 7 touchdowns, 4 interceptions for the season, but it's not even the raw numbers. It's just how he's looked. Forget about making other players better around him. He's actually, you know, he's been like an anchor. And with Aaron Rodgers, you're not going to get the guy who, if he's not playing well, holds himself accountable. You're not going to get the defense is playing great. I need to step it up. It's on me. No. That's not going to get with Aaron Rodgers. There's no accountability. There is a guy who, again, is like an anchor in the locker room. There's no leadership with Aaron Rodgers. Trust me. Now, you might have guys that respect what he once was and the name, but as far as his leadership, Aaron Rodgers was a leader. He doesn't skip out on the mandatory minicamp. How many mandatory minicamps do you think Tom Brady missed in his career? How many mandatory minicamps do you think Peyton Manning missed in his career? You can tell that level of quarterback or Patrick Mahomes. Those guys don't miss. They're not missing minicamps. They can't wait for me. Those type of players can't wait for mini camps. So it was like, you know, fuck you. I'm Aaron Rodgers. I can do what I want. I want Lazard. I want Nathaniel Hackett. I want this, I want that. And the Jets gave him everything he wanted as if he were the second coming. And you know what? They're going to end up, you know, coming up snake eyes when this season goes into the tank. And it's headed there. That's why, again, I had no faith. When the people were talking Super Bowl with the Jets, I laughed. I was like, no. I'm like, what? The Jets? Like, what? Like, you have a 41-year-old quarterback. Again, this guy, he's not a leader. He doesn't galvanize a room. Doesn't raise spirits. This is not who he is. And he's really never been that play. Never been like that. He's just been so talented. Like, his talent is like, he's one of the most talented quarterbacks of all time. And his talent kind of was a deodorant for all the other shit that came along with him that we didn't pay attention to, that didn't start getting exposed until he kept losing championship games or kept losing and started losing playoff games that he had no business losing. Like, losing to San Francisco at home in the divisional round a couple years ago, a game they had no business losing a game to Tom Brady. In the AFC Championship at home, when Tom Brady had 3 interceptions, a game that if Tom Brady plays that poorly, you should not lose. So it started getting exposed later on in his career, even as he's still winning MVPs, as was the case in 2020 and 2021, those back to back years. It started getting exposed. Like, this guy. There's a energy that he takes out of a locker room, or there's, you know, this diva-ness can't be good for you. It's not good for your ball club, not good for your football team. Or it's all about Aaron Rodgers. And you're not winning championships that way. And right now, you're getting the worst. You're getting the attitude or lack of leadership, and you're getting the bad play, the poor play. So, again, the Jets, you bring in Jeff Ulbrich, you know, everybody, you know, these defensive coordinators or coordinators that become head coaches after the head coach gets fired, everybody loves them until they go 1-5 or start out or go 0-6 or something like that. Everybody loves them. They're kind of like the backup quarterback. So we've been hearing all these great things about Ulbrich. We'll see. Again, I think that it's a no-win situation. I don't think. Again, the Jets probably will be somewhat in playoff contention. I don't think the world's going to completely come off. Like, they're not going to go 5-12 or 4-13. They'll win enough games to stay somewhat competitive to be in playoff contention in December per se. But I can't take this team seriously. There's no, like. To me, that division is Buffalo's division. Even still, with the back-to-back losses, it's still Buffalo's division to lose. Miami, with their quarterback situation, New England's one of the worst teams in the league. And, you know, the Jets, frankly, to me, don't have a quarterback and are offensively challenged, to say the least. And you're already hearing defensive players are already pissed off about, again, breaking, basically having a top five, top three defense and basically nothing to show for it. But a losing record. Houston, Buffalo. Houston wins it overtime 23-20. Nice comeback by the Bills, who were at one point down 20-3, but it was to no avail as Caleb Fairburn makes this 59-yard field goal. And these kickers are like, it's gotten to a point to where these kickers. It doesn't matter the range of some of these kickers. We saw it even with the Dallas kicker. 55 yards, 56 yards is nothing to some of these kickers. So you're seeing more long field goals made. I've noticed that throughout the first couple of weeks of the season, where it really doesn't matter how far, if the weather's right, how far some of these kickers are making these kicks. The big news of this game was the player Josh Allen. Allen was 9-for-30, 131 yards, which is awful in this game. Probably one of the worst games of his career. He apparently suffered a head injury. A lot of people thought that he probably was concussed, but did not leave the game, received a smelling salt, and went back in the game. I mean, it was one of those games where it really didn't matter because he was playing like shit before the hit, and it certainly didn't help his play. Listen, Houston's a very good team. I'm not going to knock Buffalo losing a tough road game to a team that is expected to somewhat to contend, that has a lot of talent, that's clearly improved. So, you know, Buffalo will play the Jets coming up this week. I believe that's the that's the Monday night. Well, yes, that's the Monday night game next week. So that'll be a huge game, a huge game for both teams, for various reasons. Both teams will come in limping. Again, nice win for Houston. Nice win for Houston as they continue to be led by one of the best young quarterbacks in the league and C.J. Stroud. Allen again had a day that, you know, at times I had just one of those days where, you know, it was one of those, mama said there'll be days like this. He wasn't even a factor. I mean, he did have 54 yards rushing, but not a major factor from that standpoint. This is despite the fact that Buffalo as a team had 150 yards rushing. Normally when Buffalo was able to run the ball effectively, they normally are winning those games. But again, give Houston credit. They hang on and go to 4-1, 3-0 at home. And Buffalo falls to 3-2. But their last two losses, I mean, at Baltimore and at Houston. So I'm not like, you know, I'm not gonna push the panic button in regards to the Buffalo Bills. The third game, Kansas City the Saints. Kansas City doubles up the Saints 26-13. This is probably, well, not probably, this is without question Kansas City's best offensive performance since the opening, since they played Baltimore opening week. They had well over 450 yards of offense. They left a lot of points on the board. They actually should have cracked like 35 to 40 points. They were just 2-for-7 from the red zone. Again, this game probably should have been as close as it was. Bad news for the Saints as they fall to 2-3. Derek Carr is going to be out a couple weeks with an oblique injury, so that's a disaster for them, especially in a tough division with Atlanta and Tampa Bay. Both those teams are playing well, so that's a rough one. That's a rough one for New Orleans. Tough for them to swallow. They were outgained 460-220. So they were physically dominated in this game. But the only reason they stayed in it, Patrick Mahomes had his sixth straight game with an interception, which certainly is a rarity for him. But you know, not setting the world on fire this year. But it hasn't mattered because the Kansas City defense, especially in the second half, has just been nothing short of spectacular. Coming into the Saints game, they only had given up 22 second half points. They give up 6 points in this half. So in five games, they've given up 28 second half points. Think about that for a second. 28 second half points in five games. As a matter of fact, that Spagnuolo is probably responsible for the Derek Carr injury. They came on a blitz, all out, zero blitz, that knocked Carr out the game and forced them to go to win the game as well. Kansas City had taken control of this game at this point and forced them to go to Jake Haener, who was just 2-for-7 for 17 yards. It's a big loss. So it's a big loss for the Saints, who started out the season well, but who are now limping. Ever since their impressive win at Dallas. They fall 2-3. They lose their quarterback, and we'll see if they can kind of stay afloat. As Carr will be out for the next couple of weeks. Kansas City, the beat goes on. They're 5-0, 3-0 at home. They have a bye week next week. So they continue to be the class of the league with how they're playing. And the final game of the evening, of the weekend, very impressive win for the Dallas Cowboys, taking out Pittsburgh 20-17. Dallas, give Dallas a lot of credit. It's hard for me as a Commander fan to give Dallas anything, but I have to give them credit where credit was due. They had a number of injuries. You're talking, you know, Micah Parsons, DeMarcus Lawrence, but they go into Pittsburgh, tough crowd, tough situation. The game was delayed by like an hour. The game didn't start at 9:45, didn't end until after 1 a.m. After 1 a.m., they drive down the field. They drive down the field and get a game-winning touchdown. Dak Prescott, who didn't play particularly well, great. He was okay. I know he ended up racking up a bunch of yards, but had a couple of picks. But Dallas dominated this game for the Lions scrimmage. They outgained Pittsburgh. Outgained Pittsburgh 445-226 and get the win. Great win for Dallas. That's a big time win on the road. They improved a 3-0 away from Jerry Land, Jerry's World. Pittsburgh falls to 3-2. They lose their second straight game. This is hard to watch Pittsburgh play offense. It's hard. Oh, it's hard to watch Pittsburgh play offense. Pittsburgh this year, similar to last year, they're gonna have another top defense. Their defense right now is ranked second in points allowed. In terms of points allowed. Offensively, they're ranked 26 in points for. So, again, Pittsburgh, the same old song with Pittsburgh as it was last year. Great defense and mediocre offense. And that might be good enough for 9-8, 8-9, but that they are not a threat in the AFC with that offense. And so, I mean, Justin Fields, he can make some plays here and there. I do think he's still a better option than Russell Wilson. I think Wilson is cooked at this stage in his career. But the offense is tough to watch. It really is tough. It's not like they don't have talent. They have some talent on the outside. I like Najee Harris in terms of the running backs. They have some players, but as far as the quarterback, that's the difference. I mean, Justin Fields is just not there right now as far as from a developmental standpoint. And it shows as far as their offense. The offense is hard to watch. They have a hard time getting yards or generating big plays in general. And they're really, really at this point, way too dependent on their defense, to be honest with you, to not only to stop teams, but to turn them over. TJ Watt collected his 100th sack of his soon-to-be Hall of Fame career. He's headed towards being an all-time great. Has won a defensive player of the year. Just a dominant force. 100 sack in 109 games. Only Reggie White got to 100 sacks faster. So TJ Watt, again, 100 sacks in 109 games. He has not been in the league that long. So that's a big time accomplishment from him. But Pittsburgh, the room for error for Pittsburgh is minuscule. It's minuscule with that offense. It just is. You hold a team to 20 points at home, you should win the game. I mean, you should win the game. They would think about it. They would have to hold Dallas to 13 points or 16 points for them to win that game. That's in the National Football League. It's hard to hold a team under 20 points. It's hard to hold a team under 20 points, especially let alone under 17 points. We're going to deep dive a wild Saturday in the world of college football. College football, listen, people have complained about college football, the NIL, and all the transfer portal and all this other stuff. This college football season has been nothing short of spectacular. You had a day, right? And it began on Friday with the UNLV up, Syracuse being upset by UNLV. UNLV was ranked for the first time in seemingly forever, and they get upset at home by Syracuse. And there's been a lot of home upsets by unranked teams being ranked teams. It's just a crazy day in the SEC. Bama falls to Vanderbilt after their win over Georgia. You have Tennessee falling. You have Tennessee going down to Arkansas. And then you cap it off with Missouri getting rocked by Texas A&M, who all of a sudden have gotten hot after their opening week loss or their week one loss at home to Notre Dame. Now they're 5-1. So a wild week in the SEC. You also had Minnesota taking out USC. SMU taking out Louisville. So a number of ranked teams went down on Saturday. And again, this was not supposed to be like, yeah, you only had one team. There was only one matchup of two ranked teams. That was Missouri and Texas A&M. So this wasn't even supposed to be a big time weekend of college football. This is supposed to be one of those weekends, not get by weekends, but one of those weekends where, you know, you figure the powers that be will handle their business. But this is where college football is at right now. Miami had to have this miracle 25-point comeback to take out Cal in California, as you had College Game Day in Cal for the first time ever. So that's where college football is at right now. Like, college football is, you know, it's not only do we have the 12-team playoff, but week by week, you really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, like I said, a couple of weeks ago, Georgia almost lost to Kentucky. Then Kentucky beats Ole Miss at Ole Miss for the first time since 1978. And now next week, you have a loaded set of games, especially in the SEC. I mean, you have, by the way, Clemson is playing great football right now. We wrote them off a dead after they lost. Well, I did, or at least I did, wrote them off a dead after their loss, after they got embarrassed by Georgia in week one. They all of a sudden ran off four straight games. They're ranked number 10. So, you know, they're looking good as of right now. Again, Texas. Oh, so you had so this week, you had Texas and Oklahoma, Penn State, USC, Penn State, USC. You have the big one, of course, Ohio State, Oregon, in Eugene, Ole Miss, LSU. So this will be a huge weekend of college football. And you know, a Colorado team will host the Kansas State. Rose Kansas State, who is up to number 18 and playing well as well. So you have 2-4-1 teams in the Big 12. Colorado, who came off a bye, having won three straight games after getting embarrassed by Nebraska. So right now, college football is on fire right now. And college football, like this, even though the importance of each game is not as big as it once was, considering you have a 12-team playoff versus a 14 playoff, it's still like I said, any given Saturday, it's gotten to a point where you like nothing should surprise you with some of these games right now, because that's just where we're at. I think that the NIL, I think that the talent, I think this is the most parity we've seen in college football. You know, you lose a Nick Saban, like there's no way that Nick Saban is losing to. And again, all the respect to the current coach. I'm not knocking him at all. He's obviously a top coach coming from Washington, what he did with Washington. But and again, that was another upset. Washington taking out Michigan. Michigan's down this year. Well, not what they once were in Harbaugh's last two or three years. But Nick Saban is not. You're not losing. Nick Saban didn't lose games to Vanderbilt. Nick Saban was not losing games to Vanderbilt. Alabama lose to LSU, yes. They lose an occasional game to Texas A&M, yes. But then I like Vanderbilt, like no. That just didn't happen. Miami almost losing to Cal. So this is where we're at in college football right now, and it's pretty exciting to be honest with you, because again, you don't know what's going to happen from week to week. You really don't know. And who knows, if Colorado beats Kansas State, then we have something special possibly brewing in Boulder. They have played extremely well of late, especially the last couple of weeks. So we'll see if they can keep it going with their play. Who ran the week? Vanderbilt. Like, you beat the number one team for the first time in your history, and that number one team is Alabama, who have been playing as well as any team in the country, coming off the best win of any team in the country in terms of beating Georgia the week before. You have won the week. So give shout out to Vanderbilt for how well they played in beating Alabama. And in that game, you kept waiting for Alabama to kind of wake up and take over the game, and it never happened. So give all the credit in the world to the Vanderbilt Commodores. A couple of real thoughts before I let you go. As far as the Major League Baseball playoffs, we talked about parity in college football. Well, that is the exact – I mean, parity is the perfect word to use right now in regards to the baseball. As of right now, the Mets are up 6-0 over the Philadelphia Phillies, top of the eighth, as we're recording this right now. By the time you hear this, that, of course, that game will be complete, and probably the Mets will be up 2-1. But coming into this evening, all four divisional series were tied at one. Okay, that's not by accident. The most intriguing of all these series to me, easily, is the Dodgers Padres series, which continues tonight. Tonight, with the Padres taking game two, 10-2, and right now, so far, I mean, the Dodgers are in trouble because they have not been able to get the Padres out through the first two games. The Padres have scored 15 runs in the first two games, easily could have won game one. The Dodgers are forcing them to be up 2-0, if not for the heroics in game one of Otani. And these two teams hate each other. The Dodgers, the Padres, there's a little brother thing that the Dodgers have with the Padres. Dodgers have all the history, the prestige. They had the championship back in 2020, even though that is not aging well considering some of their postseason failures since then. But the Padres, who took out the Dodgers in 2022, would want nothing more than to beat the Dodgers. They hate the Dodgers. Those two teams cannot stand each other. There's a lot of star power in this series with the likes of Otani, Machado. Tatis Jr. has gotten his swing back and seemingly looking like the superstar that we thought that he could be before, you know, the suspension and some injuries. And the Padres have better pitching. That's all it's true. They have better pitching than the Dodgers. This is not – Dodgers have a number of injuries in terms of their pitching staff, no Kershaw. But this is not a vintage Dodger team by any stretch of the imagination. And again, it hasn't taken a vintage Dodger team not to come up big in the postseason. So I don't expect I think Padres will probably win that series. And again, these baseball playoffs, any one of these teams remaining possibly could probably win the championship or get to the World Series and possibly win a championship. It's that wide open. Remember, this season you had no 100-win teams for the first time in a long time. The balance, the money, revenue sharing, that's balanced. And it is all about, again, player development, these farm systems. So baseball has gotten into a point to where you literally don't know who's going to win it from year to year. We'll see what happens. Especially in regards to that Dodger Padre series. And I think that's clearly, to me, that's clearly the showcase series, even more so than the Mets Philadelphia. As far as the NFL standings goes, I'm looking at it right now. You have some great action in two divisions I'm looking at. And they're both, frankly, in the NFC. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not ready to say this yet, but the NFC could be up for grabs. It could be. I'm not quite ready to say that. I want to see San Francisco with a healthy McCaffrey and see if they can go right the ship. But the NFC could be up for grabs. But these divisions, the NFC North Everybody has a winning record. Okay, and there's been some excellent quarterback play, and there's some excellent quarterback play in the NFC North, even to get even with Minnesota getting the most out. Sam Darnold, Keller Williams has played better with the Bears. They have won a couple of games in a row. NFC South, I could have easily made the Falcons Tampa Bay Thursday night game the game of the week. That was a great game. Kirk Cousins throws for a zillion yards, seemingly. Tough loss. That's a bad loss for Tampa. Tampa Bay absolutely should have won that game, but Atlanta kind of stole that from them. We'll see if the Saints can bounce, can again stay in the mix in the playoffs as Carr gets better, is injured. But that Falcon Tampa Bay is going to be a great race. We know, yeah, that Falcon Tampa Bay race will be a great race in that division. Bad loss for San Francisco. I don't know about the NFC West right now. I still favor San Francisco, but that was a bad loss against Arizona. I mean, losing a game like that, a double-digit lead to Arizona, that was a rough one. I told you about San Francisco earlier this season that something wasn't right with them. And I'm like, there's something is just not clicking with that team. And it's more than just Christian McCaffrey missing games. It's more than that. So, like what's going on in NFC North, the NFC East, one of the best stories in the National Football League has to be what's going on down in the DMV with the Washington Commanders, as Jay McDaniels is making a legit, now it's very early, I don't even like talking about MVP, but he is making a legit MVP case for the way he's playing. Probably right now has one of the best deep balls in the NFL right now when he gets loose in the pocket. Washington playing well at 4-1, their best start since 2008. You got to go back to, like, that was the Jim Zorn years, if you remember him. And that was that started out well, did not end it poorly, to say the least. Those were the days. Good old Jim Zorn. And the Giants at 2-3 haven't been awful. They had a big win against Seattle on the road. That was an impressive win on the road for Seattle. Eagles had a bye week. We'll see. Eagles had a bye week. So you only have three of the two teams are 500. Three of the four teams are 500 and above. We already talked about the Cowboys, how impressive a win that was in the against the Steelers on Sunday night. Now, as far as the AFC goes, I think the AFC legitimately is three teams that have to me separated themselves, and I don't see this changing, to be honest with you. I won't ever dismiss Buffalo as long as Josh Allen is the quarterback, and they do have a pedigree of winning a lot of regular season games, but the three most impressive teams have clearly been Kansas City, Houston, and Baltimore. Those three teams, I think, are going to be in it for the long haul, injuries withstanding. It's going to be interesting to see what Cleveland does with Deshaun Watson. I was watching that Commanders game, of course. Everybody talked about the Commander defense playing great in that game. Yeah, you want to give them credit somewhat, but Deshaun Watson, it looks cooked. I mean, he looks done. Like you can't play like the level of quarterback that he's playing right now. It has been god awful. Like he does not look like an NFL quarterback right now. And mind you, this guy is not. Deshaun Watson's what, 29 years old. He's only 29 years old right now. The numbers don't even tell the story of how bad he's been. He's only completing 60% of his passes. Like 60% of his passes. You know, 5 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, completing. Only 60% of his passes. It's hard. I can only imagine what Cleveland has been like for Cleveland fans to watch him play right now. Because he has been, I mean, when I mean bad, beyond bad, He's been awful. He's been one of the worst looking quarterbacks that well, he's been one of the worst looking starting quarterbacks I've seen in the 2024 season. He's been that bad. And there are some rumblings about, people are saying, I heard Rob Gronkowski thinks that he should be benched. And I don't know if I can necessarily disagree with Gronk on that one because you have a team, again, that Cleveland team has talent. That Cleveland team is not a 1-4 team as far as their talent goes, especially on the defense end. Should be better than 1-4. They should not be 1-4 at all. But it has been hard to watch Deshaun Watson play quarterback in the NFL. In the NFL, and they're again, that is a fully guaranteed $230 million contract. They have no outs on that unless one of these cases come back up and they can get an out where they can terminate the contract. That's the only thing. I mean, they always have to hope that one of these cases comes out to where the NFL can, suspend him. That's literally, I'm not even joking. That's literally their only out. They cannot flat out cut this guy just and wipe away his contract. You just can't do it right now. So they are absolutely stuck with him. That's going to go down as one of the worst contracts in football easily. And unlike the Cincinnati Bengals, I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel right now for the Cleveland Browns. I just don't. There's no energy with that team. Their defense is going to start to get pissed off and quickly turn on the offense if it's not happening already. And they're still in the division where they got to play Cincinnati. You got to play Baltimore in the AFC. You got to play all these playoff caliber teams. So there's no light. There's no end in sight as far as waiting for the Browns to turn this around. I don't see it happening. I can see Cincinnati turning it around. I can't see the Browns turning this thing around. That's gonna wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal podcast. I will see you next time. Enjoy the rest of your week. So long.